Some of the fans need to bow down and kiss my feet and throw rose petals because I'm actually making the transition. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage. He's the Canadian Loon. I'm the Gray Jay. He's the godfather of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. I'm John Franklin. Craig, how are you?
I'm well. That's an inside reference. One person is going to get in the comments.
If you'd like to know why I call Craig the Canadian Loon and myself the Gray Jay, normally I would tell you to go to the Patreon. But tonight, I'm mixing things up. I'm going to give you an old-fashioned cheat code. If you subscribe to Fight Night Picks on YouTube, if you follow us on Spotify, if you follow Matt Allen on Twitter, and if you send James Lynch a dick pic, I will send you the download to the WAV file of that backstory off Napster. All right, Craig, on this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk Stipe Duck and Francis. Is the Italian dream a nightmare at 185? And Floyd taking on YouTube. But we begin with Yoel Romero. Craig, the UFC and Yoel Romero have parted ways after 7 years of doing business together. While Bellator and PFL have both said, nah, we're good on Romero's services, the Underground Whisper Network is saying that Combate Americas is DTF. That's down to finance for the uninitiated. So, Craig, Yoel Romero is 2 months older than me. Does he have anything left to give the sport of mixed martial arts?
I don't know if he does, but you know who does? It's a guy that's on my MMA Mount Rushmore. Do you remember way back that episode of Early Stoppage when I had Art Davies up there and I had Hoist Gracie and I had Ken Shamrock? And who was the other guy that I had up there? It was Campbell McLaren. I'll answer my own question. Campbell McLaren's doing the damn thing over with Combate. And I mean, why not? If you want to get eyes on the sport and you want to get eyes from Latin America on the sport, why not put Tito Ortiz in there with Yoel Romero? I think it's a great play for PFL, or sorry, for Combate, less so for PFL, less so for Bellator. And I heard some rumblings of BKFC, but it doesn't look like that's going to come to fruition. Or maybe it does. I mean, they did, after all, hire a Cuban star MMA fighter in the past year or so. Do you remember who that was?
No, hit me.
Hector Lombard.
Look at you.
Same division, middleweight. I mean, who didn't want that? I didn't watch it, but somebody did. People watched it on that Underground Whisper Network of yours. But I like this. I like this for Combate. If they can pony up the money, and it maybe, you know, if Combate can pony up the money there, maybe we can pony up some money to get you freed from whatever bunker you're in.
We could probably do that, yeah. I like this for Combate Americas. I don't – this whole Tito Ortiz rumor – dude, they're going to build a park in California for the slain councilman, Tito Ortiz, the mayor pro tem.
Oh, man.
You know what that was? I don't know about that fight. But, I mean, the irony of it is that we think that Romero's washed in the UFC, but he's absolutely going to murder Tito Ortiz. I like the connection that you made with Latin America. That's what Combate Americas is shooting for. I think that's an amazing demographic. I think they just haven't found the right set of guys yet. I think they're out there. I think, like, if they got their hands on Yair Rodriguez, there's a few guys that if they got those guys over to that promotion would take off. And so I like Yoel going there. I'm just really struggling to figure out the fights for him.
I mean, yeah, you make the one fight with Tito Ortiz. What do you do after that? Do you just go the Bellator route and just sign a bunch of old UFC guys to fight him? Like, I really don't know what you do there.
What do you think about Anderson Silva? Do you think he would do it?
Oh, I mean, yeah, Anderson Silva would take that fight 9 times out of 10. Why not? I mean, it's a paycheck, right? And it's one extra time to fight.
And they've never fought, so it gets interesting. If McLaren can pull the right money together, that gets interesting.
All right, John, so let's move ahead, and I'm going to read a tweet in full to you. If you and your OnlyFans game making that money, get it, girl. But all you weirdos saying, OF, next for me, that's like my only option? Like that's my only option. Can kiss my A, $2 signs. John, do you think Saperbeg Safarov said that when he got cut from the UFC?
I don't. No, I don't.
Ooh,
think
show me that TNA Saperbeg.
I don't think they're looking for him on only. He's not the reason why guys are refreshing their OnlyFans home screen.
Give me that Saperbeg. Yeah, I think I might be the only one that was looking for a return for Sapper Big Safra. But as soon as Julian Marquez got rebooked, I figured the writing's on the wall for old Sapper Big. And if you don't know, I'm not talking about Sapper Big. But again, the UFC's been cutting fighters left, right, and center. They said they were going to cut around 60 before the end of the year. The fighter that I'm referring to, of course, is Rachel Ostovich. Do you think that the next stop's OnlyFans, though? Is she going to go the Beck Rawlings route? I remember way back, you and I talked about this. Macy Chason wasn't happy about the OnlyFans fighters, but what do you see here for Rachel Ostovich?
You know, here's the unfortunate thing, is that sometimes when people jump the gun on something, it's almost like you can't do it because it's already been said and you don't want to look like you're falling. I really think that, you know, she how do I say this without sounding like a creep? I think that she could make some money on OnlyFans. I think that she could do it in a relatively clean way. I think that what some fighters I've heard are doing is...
Can I make money on OnlyFans?
I think so, yeah. For the Canadian foot fetish crowd. I think that Rachel Ostovich, if she took everything that she puts on Instagram and it all of a sudden only became available on OnlyFans, it would be clean and then she could make money off of it. So there's an option. But I think there's more for her out there. Listen, she once upon a time fought Paige VanZant, which is once upon a time not too long ago, and Paige VanZant's now in BKFC. So to think that BKFC wouldn't be very happy to run that fight back, you're nuts. So I do think she has other options. Let me ask you a question.
Uh-oh.
What do you think her options are in terms of, do you think promotions would be silly not to bring her in? Because her asking price can't be that high, can it, Craig?
I mean, from what I can hear on your end, it sounds like there was just a plane coming in to pick you up from that bunker. But if I focus on your question for just a second, yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be promotions out there. She was featured on Dana White's Looking for a Fight. That's kind of like evergreen content that you can just continue to rebrand and repackage. The fact that she jumped off the cliff, but Dana White didn't. So she's tougher than Dana White. Look at the fighter we just signed, tougher than Dana White, and fought in the UFC. But I mean, she has that. She has Instagram opportunities. She has sponsorship opportunities. Once you land that UFC contract, that's something that we talk about all the time. Is the juice worth the squeeze? If you can make more money in a smaller promotion, do you do that? Or do you go with the big promotion, less money for the exposure? For her, she cashed in on the money and she cashed in on the exposure. So for now, BKFC, smaller promotions, building up a Hawaiian promotion. There's so many different things she can do. I hate to say that the possibilities are limitless, but, you know, there is a cap on them. But she definitely has a lot of opportunities out there for sure.
Well, but there's going to be some days where the phone's not ringing and she's got to be prepared for that. I mean, listen, Gina Carano is the hottest thing in the world now because she's in The Mandalorian. Well, dude, she's not been fighting for some time. So there was a long stretch where she was very fortunate to be from a family of wealth, or she was very fortunate to have put her fight money away, or she was very fortunate to do X, Y, Z. Because the reality is, and this is no knock on Rachel Ostovich or Ronda Rousey or Paige VanZant or Gina Carano for that matter, there is a difference between being a model and being an attractive fighter. There are levels to this thing. And part of the reason why the followings exist for Paige VanZant and Rachel Ostovich and Gina Carano is because they're fighters. And if they're no longer fighters, would they be interested just as hot women anymore? That's the question. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm just saying that my point is that she's much more marketable as a fighter than not as a fighter. So she needs to go look for other opportunities to be getting in a cage every now and then. All right, Craig. John Jones is frustrated. I mean, there's so many goats in MMA, it's hard to keep track. But instead of just sitting back and doing nothing, Jones has a plan. Jones said, quote, "I do feel like I'm the best fighter in the sport's history, but I just don't want there to be any debate. And one way I can do that is by capturing this heavyweight crown. And that's exactly what I'm going to do." So, Craig, is he right? Will that end the debate?
Who else is up there? I mean, we've talked about the GOAT conversation before quite a few times. GSP, Habib.
Anderson Silva.
What about, like, Nate Diaz?
No, he's not in.
What about, like, Nick Diaz?
Mm-mm.
What about, like, their training partner, Chris Avila, that's, like, 6-8?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, so Chris Avila's not on that level. That's probably the second Chris Avila shot I've taken this week. Chris Avila is going to come after me one of these days. 6-8, Chris Avila. But if I focus on this question again, because I'm being led astray by my own mind and imagination, I don't know. Does he really need a heavyweight crown? I mean, he's technically undefeated, save for the 12-6 elbow to Matt Hamill. I don't think he needs a heavyweight crown to really prove himself. He is, to me, probably the GOAT. It all depends on where you land on the PED side of things or the cocaine side of things. But for me, I don't think that he needs that heavyweight belt to prove anything else to anyone.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, when we start talking a little bit about DC and we built a resume for him, there was a very little GOAT talk, but I mean, this is pre-Stipe. The people that were saying if he beats Stipe, is he the GOAT? So the pushback for DC was, well, he was never the best light heavyweight because Jones is. And he really wouldn't even be the best heavyweight if he beat Stipe because, you know, if he was going to retire, he would have all the title defenses. Well, Jones has best light heavyweight of all time locked down. So the question is, does beating Stipe Miocic qualify him for best heavyweight or is he near it? And then in that case, the double champ means something. I think this probably puts an end to the debate for me. The debate might already be over. But I just think that that's the next thing. I mean, if you're beating, as a matter of fact, if he beats Miocic for it, it's a wrap. If he beats Ngannou for it, I might have to see a couple title defenses at heavyweight. But if he beats Miocic is the greatest heavyweight of all time. I think that you kind of absorb some of Miocic's legacy if you can do that.
So, John, if we can kind of switch gears and talk about a guy that I thought had the opportunity to become the greatest heavyweight of all time. Anthony Rumble Johnson has just signed with Bellator. There was rumblings about it this morning. Then it was confirmed. I know Mike Heck was one of the first ones on the scene there, friend of the show, former Between the Links host, current Between the Links host on another network. But overall, this is a huge signing for Bellator. I mean, they have Vadim Nemkov possibly taking on Corey Anderson as next title defense. Ryan Bader's over there doing the damn thing at heavyweight. Fedor's still running victory laps. John, where do you think Rumble Johnson fits into the scene at Bellator? Do you think it's a 205? Is it 265? And if you had to be a fantasy matchmaker, and these aren't the Bellator prelims, so let it fly, who do you think Rumble Johnson is going to take on his first fight over there?
Man, that's a tough one because, you know, we talk about do you just set him up with like a Fedor just because it's a marquee fight that'll draw a lot of eyes? Do you put him in there with Bader? I think when Bader was still in the UFC, Rumble was still a middleweight, so that they probably never fought. Do you do Corey Anderson? You know, it's interesting, man. I don't really know. I mean, I want to see the Bader fight. The question is, do you do it at heavyweight? And to me, the most logical answer to your question would be, what do you want the future for Ryan Bader to be? If you want to have Ryan Bader as someone you can market moving forward, then you keep Rumble Johnson away from him. If you don't, then you use him as Rumble Johnson's first fight, and if he beats Ryan Bader, he gets a shot right at the belt. I think that, to me, is
Ryan Bader's got the belt.
Oh, I'm thinking light heavyweight. I'm thinking that Bader lost the light heavyweight belt. So, yeah. You could do that. You could have him fight for the light heavyweight belt, or you could have him fight for the heavyweight belt against Ryan Bader, and if he wins, go down to light heavyweight and challenge for that belt. I mean, that's really making the best use of his time because he's been away for a while.
He's such a strange case because you remember the fight against DC, he decided to wrestle and it kind of worked a little bit, but then it didn't. What if he fought Vitaly Minnikov at heavyweight? I'm a weird guy. I want that fight. Minnikov, when he fought Tim Johnson, who's on a record or who's on a run, I can't think of words. He German suplexed him twice and finished him. I'd love to see Rumble Johnson try and cope with that at heavyweight, where Johnson's got so much punching power, and then you've got such an out in Vitaly Minnikov. He can just wrestle for days. But the trouble is there. You remember when he left Bellator, there was unfinished business with his contract. It was looking like he was never going to come back. He was undefeated. He just kept racking up title defenses. He went over to Russia, and then he came back. And, of course, he has lost since. But I'd like to see that fight. I think it'd be a weird one. It'd be a tough one to try and market, but I'd be there for it.
What you just said is exactly why I like being a part of this network. Because when I do shows with you and when I do shows with Matt.
One show.
Okay. You know, I do one show with a guy and the jealousy's already seeping through.
Yeah.
Listen, I think that that when you have a guy, see, I look at things that, you know, the old joke is I'm half a casual and half a hardcore. And I think that you guys look at a guy like Minnikov, and I don't want to speak for Matt, I'll only speak for you because you said it, as that'd be a great matchup. I look at him as like, what are you gaining here? If he happens to beat Rumble Johnson, and he could, if he happens to beat him, have you created a star? My thing is you only fight a star if the result in beating the star will be another star. I don't think this kid is going to be a star, even if he beats Rumble Johnson, even if he knocks Rumble Johnson dead in the first round. I don't
He still has a little boy haircut, so it's hard to market one of those guys with a little boy haircut. But like, I know it's something that we're going to talk about later. They've signed a lot of Russian prospects. I think that might be a play coming forward.
All right, let's move on. Craig, Floyd Mayweather has a long list of accomplishments with belts over several weight divisions, most money ever made in boxing, most pay-per-views ever watched in combat sports, but he's never fought an 0-1 YouTuber before. Well, that just might change as Mayweather's been making overtures at Logan Paul. Paul still stinging from that heartbreaker against something called KSI. I don't know what is that a government agency? Is it a medical term? Is it a unit of measurement? What is a KSI? Anyway, he lost to that. And now he wants to bounce back. Craig, I know you're going to purchase this for sure. I'm just not sure at what tier, because you can get in a lot of different places on this fight. So give me your thoughts on this fight so I can decide what price point you're entering at.
$49.99.
That's where you're coming in?
Yep, that's what I paid for Tyson Jones, and I enjoyed it.
Okay.
You know, this is the thing. You know, I put out a teaser in the YouTube community tab for the fact that we were going to reboot This Week in MMA, which is trending now on YouTube, Spotify, and iTunes. And we had Adrian Yanez on, we had Tebe, Canadian music star and big MMA fan. And when I teased it, you know, I put out a promo, Matt and I boxing, and Matt hit me one hard in the chest, and then he does a show with you, which stabbed me in the back. So he's got me from both angles. But, you know, a lot of people are heartbroken with Fight Night Picks in the fact that I did a prediction for Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr., and consequently, I had to break down the co-main event, which was Jake Paul and Nate Robinson. And I found a lot of pleasure in that. You know why, John? Because at the end of the day, this is entertainment. I showed you my weird stance socks that look like they've been tattooed. I have a lot of fun doing this kind of stuff. And also, I have a lot of fun watching these fights. So when Logan Paul fights Floyd Mayweather, am I going to buy it? Yes. Why? Well, what else could I do on a Saturday night? Really? I mean, what else can I do? I can't go to the movie theaters just yet. Well, I can up here, actually, but I won't. So you could go to the theaters. You could go to a concert. You could watch fights like I'm already going to do. So why not roll two screens and watch this? Have fun with it.
I agree. I think that, you know, shockingly breaking news to the audience, I'm older than you. And because I'm older than you, I remember what celebrity boxing used to be. Celebrity boxing used to be like, you know, Horshack from Welcome Back, Kotter fights Screech from Saved by the Bell. You know, and Danny Bonaducci was in there. And all Jose Canseco was in there. And nobody really took it seriously. And the gloves were kind of too big. And it was like, now it's legit in a way. Like, these guys are actually training. These guys are actually coming in ready. You know, I mean, listen – is Jake Paul going to go on a going to turn into the next Aaron Pico? No. But can he start clipping off other celebrities? And, you know, what Ben Askren said come to fruition, which is that Jake Paul just – he doesn't want to be tough. He wants everybody to think he's tough, which is why you fight Nate Robinson. And in fairness to Jake Paul, he's tougher than Nate Robinson. So – or he was that night. So, for me, I'm with you. I think that these guys are going to take it somewhat seriously and do weigh-ins and train. And listen – for whatever you want to say about the Paul brothers, okay, they're taking it seriously. They're training, and they're coming in ready to fight, which is more than I could say for some MMA fighters, and which is more than I could say for some boxers who are professionals.
It's, you know, I hate to try and sell it for them, but it's almost worth it. It's dinner and a show. It's enjoyable. And to your point about the Aaron Pico comment, Ilia Topuria is the next Aaron Pico. Man, that kid put on a show last weekend. His punching's insane. His wrestling's insane. His grappling's insane. And that leads me into the next topic, because in our main event last weekend, UFC Vegas 16, the Italian Dream really pulled the trick or treat over the Joker and got a crazy win over Jack Hermanson, really outlasted him and looked amazing. He's now ranked in the top 10 in the UFC's middleweight division, and he's ready to take on the best at 185 pounds. So, John, do we pump the brakes on this kid? Because, after all, he does have a split decision loss to Marvin Vettori. I don't know whether or not it was Chris Lee that scored that extra round for him or not. But overall, where do you see this guy fitting in the top half of that middleweight division?
You know, when I spoke with Matt Allen on the FMP recap show, which has been rebooted and reloaded and recharged and re-everything, this is what I told him. I'm starting to come around on this guy. And for those of you that obsess over these things, Craig said a split decision win over Marvin Vettori. He meant Israel Adesanya. I know you guys are going crazy in the cars. Relax. He does a lot of shows, this guy. Says a lot.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm here for you. So listen, I just saw a lot of things with Vettori. You know, we talked a long time ago, and I mentioned this to Matt, and we may do this down the road. You and I have knocked around the idea of doing a podcast called The Blueprint, where we discuss, you know, we talk about a guy that got a title shot and another guy that got a title shot and a guy that might get one, and we figure out what's the blueprint for a title shot. Well, this kid Vettori is checking a lot of boxes. You know, he goes five rounds. He goes, beats a guy that maybe he might even be favored against, but you could really see him losing in Hermanson, who comes and is, you know, fit and ready to fight. He's not some guy you just send away. Hermanson doesn't fold. He's not, although they may look somewhat similar, he's not Dennis Seaver, where he just goes in there against Connor and just crumbles. So he's a legit guy. And Vettori looked good. And I was telling Matt that a lot of the things that I was seeing Vettori do, and I want to say this to you so you can get after it like Matt got after it. I'm seeing a lot of – I saw one similarity to Conor McGregor and Marvin Vettori. It was this. He's got that straight left, right? And he spent a lot of the fight trying to hide it. He spent a lot of the fight throwing it. But he found a lot of different ways to hide it. And, I mean, when I see a guy have one weapon that he feels really good about, but yet he diversifies his game to hide that weapon or to show different looks or whatever, I feel like I'm starting to see a championship fighter. And I see, listen, we can't say in the same breath that Israel Adesanya has grown leaps and bounds from his split decision win over Marvin Vettori and not give Marvin Vettori the same credit, right? Marvin Vettori has grown since his fight with Israel Adesanya as well. You know, Marvin Vettori is undefeated since his fight with Israel Adesanya as well. Now, has he been fighting the same level of competition? No. But we got to give this kid a little bit of he's progressing as well. He's growing as well.
Unless a fighter loses in an absolute drubbing, like I know Matt and I talk about this in the predictions, the fact that, you know, somebody could be coming in on short notice or maybe they're not quite ready for this fight against, you know, opponent A. But the loser really doesn't lose any stock. And I know the fight that Joaquin Buckley had against Kevin Holland, you knew Buckley was going to lose. But he went out there, put on a show, and you knew that he had more to give. And I, like, it's not a hot take or an after-the-fact thing I'm saying here. I said it in the prediction then, and I'll stand by it. And you saw what Buckley did against Kasanganai. And you see the path that Buckley can take to the top. For Marvin Vettori losing that fight to Adesanya, you could tell there was something special there. Now, John, I don't know how crazy Matt went, but I think the only connective tissue between Marvin Vettori and Conor McGregor before you filmed that recap show was the fact that, well, they're both from Europe and that's it. I've never heard anybody compare those two guys before, but I do agree with you. You know, if you have a piston for a left hand and you keep it cocked and ready and by the side of your hand, like what? John Bon Jovi kept his six string in the 80s. I mean, Marvin Vettori really had something special there on Saturday night. He put on a great performance. He hurt Hermanson's orbital. Hermanson hurt his foot, so he couldn't kick high anymore. There were a lot of factors as to why Hermanson couldn't perform properly, but the shine has to go towards the Italian fighter here. I mean, he put on an absolutely great performance. And the other thing that we didn't really get to see in that fight was his wrestling, his grappling. You didn't really get to see it because you had to worry about Hermanson striking as well. He's a dual threat. So overall, you're right. Vettori definitely won the night. And I mean, if you look at the rankings, he's one spot behind Till, then Cannonier, Costa, Whitaker, and Adesanya. A fight against Till, Costa, or Cannonier, those would all be fun. I think Whitaker deserves a shot at the belt, so maybe that one's out of the question, but who knows?
Yeah, I think that, and listen, guys, by no means, and I've said this again before, I'll say it again, by no means am I saying that this kid has gone through murderer's row since he's fought Israel Adesanya, but I will tell you this, 54, okay, and 12. That's the records of the guys that he's defeated. Hold on, 7-11, 13, 18, 54 and 18 is the record of the four guys he's beaten. So here's what I'm trying to tell you is that I think that he has one more test to get over, but this is what I would call this fight. I think Vettori beating Hermanson reminds me of Adesanya beating Gastelum, where he was pushed. There were times I told Matt, and I stand by this, that I thought they were fighting Vittori's fight throughout. It doesn't mean that Hermanson didn't have his moments. You know, it didn't mean that you know, to a certain extent, Vettori didn't blow his wad thinking he was going to take him out in the first and then have to recover. So Hermanson had his moments. Were they as great as Vittori's? No. But, I mean, he had some pushback. Did he do as well as Gastelum did against Adesanya? No. That's the comparative tissue for me. So I happen to think that the next fight, if you're UFC and you want Vettori to be a champion, the next fight's Paulo Costa. I think that's the fight that you book to see what this kid really has. And if he beats Paulo Costa, the sky's the limit.
I'm down for it.
All right, Craig, let's move on to sparring sessions. This week I want to talk about Bellator, PFL, and the UFC. I list them alphabetically, you know, because that's what Bellator or PFL did in their slideshow when they were putting themselves right square in the middle. I have to send you that tweet. I want to talk about how Bellator and PFL have been kind of lukewarm to outright freezing cold on some of the fighters the UFC have parted ways with. Are Bellator and PFL making wise choices in some of the fighters who they're staying away from, or do they just not have the financial wherewithal to make the moves?
They're spending their money in the right places, and by they, I mean Bellator. I still have no idea what the PFL is doing. I'm assuming to sign Clarissa Shields, they had to pay a fortune, and they will pay a fortune over that three-year contract. For Bellator, though, and I talked about this on This Week in MMA, and we just filmed it tonight, so it's still going to be relatively fresh. The fact that they just signed Watanabe from Ryzen, and she had that one crossover fight with Bellator where she took on Alara Jawani and beat her. And that was one of those ones where Jawani had beaten, who was it, Beck Rawlings? And then they sent her over to that Ryzen cross promotion, and they thought, oh, geez, she's going to win 100%. Nope, Ryzen star got the win, so Bellator signs her. Bellator just keeps making these little moves, and when we look ahead to Bellator 254, which is Thursday night, they have Magomed Magomedov, who's 16-1, taking on Mateus Matos. That's a huge fight. Those are two really big prospects that maybe you haven't heard of, but Bellator has them. They have Davion Franklin, who's 2-0, taking on Anthony Garrett, who's 5-2, has a loss to, and I have to say this, I'm rock hard with emotion. I've got a phoner. His one loss in Bellator is to Jake Hager, Jack Swagger, the man. But Davion Franklin won the Jackson Wink scholarship. He's a really big wrestling prospect and a guy to look out for. And I look through this whole Bellator card. Romero Cotton, who's 4-0, taking on Justin Sumter. Romero Cotton's the homegrown Bellator guy. Justin Sumter's bounced around. He's fought for Bellator in the past, but he fought on Dana White's Contender Series before, got knocked out emphatically. They have guys that you get excited about, maybe not, you know, that's a figurative view. I get excited about these prospects. I love these Bellator prelims. And even on the main card, they like to feature these guys. But putting Magomed Magomedov and Mateus Matos as your co-main event just shows how much of an investment Bellator has made into these prospects and will continue to make. And I don't shout out this website often enough, My MMA News. I love the article that they put out today about Bellator. What they did in the past was sign the big names, the UFC names, the guys that nobody really wanted, but they could build off of. And low key, they were building up some stars and some prospects of their own. And now the tables have turned where Linton Vassell and Hani Marks are fighting under these two big prospects. I love what Bellator is doing. For PFL kind of deciding to move away from Anderson Silva and Yoel Romero, okay, cool. But let's not forget what you did a couple weeks ago when you signed the greatest heavyweight of all time in Fabrizio Verdum. That was a couple of weeks ago, PFL. Give your head a shake. So I still don't know what the PFL is doing. I like what Bellator is doing. and the UFC, they're just going to continue to kind of trim the fat off of the roster and cut some of the higher dollar fighters that aren't performing so they can continue to A, keep their head above water, but B, keep the fighters signed that they've continued to pick up through whether it's short notice dropouts or contender series.
Well, I think it's going to get interesting who the UFC decides to cut and why they decide to cut them. It's going to be very strategic cuts. And I think that this whole idea that the PFL or Bellator is ever going to catch the UFC, listen, I'm going to say this, and this is, you know, hashtag borderline political, but, you know, the UFC is a lot like the United States of America. It's only really ever going to be crumbled from within. And I think that they may make wrong decisions, and they may make, much like Pride, they're going to crumble from within if they go. And I think that, you know, for me, I think that, you know, being, I've used this analogy before, you know, there's nothing wrong with being Wendy's or Burger King or whatever. UFC is always going to be McDonald's. There's nothing wrong.
King and Wendy's to McDonald's.
But that, there's nothing wrong with being that. That's a respectable, you make a lot of money being those franchises. And so I guess my point here is I'm interested to see how the UFC strategically cuts. And, you know, because they cut two guys that they knew were pretty, you know, radioactive for Bellator and PFL, because PFL and Bellator didn't sign them. They either knew that their age, or, which is interesting that Bellator wouldn't sign an old fighter, but their age and their number, their asking price was too high. You know, the reality, Craig, is that if you're ever going to cut 60 fighters, because they have to, because of finances, now's the time to do it, because if you're in bad financial situations, everybody else is in worse, because you're the behemoth, you know? So if you're, you know, if you got to get rid of guys, chances are if you can't pay him, the other guy can't pay him either. So I'd be interested. I'm with you. I don't like the Verdum move. Some people said right after, you know, why sign Verdum and not sign Romero? It's like, well, they didn't know Romero was going to be available when they signed Verdum. So I that's a bad comparison to me. But I personally would like to see Yoel Romero or Anderson Silva go through that structure that PFL has. I doubt they ever would. I mean, if I was them, I wouldn't sign, you know, I wouldn't say, let's take a chance, I'm going to make $1 million. If I was them, I'd go, no, I want to fight this guy. I want Warrior McDonald to come to 85 and I'll fight him for 500 grand instead of going through this tournament and maybe winning $1 million. So I don't know. I'm not as bullish on Bellator as you are, but you're a prospect guy. You like those. I guess my question to you with a little bit of pushback would be, do you think Bellator should do something like Strikeforce did in the past, or even Bellator's done in the past, where you have like these, how Strikeforce did the Challenger Series? You know, could you do your version of the Contender Series, or do you think these guys should get prime real estate on regular cards?
Well, they don't, like, they get those Bellator prelims where they're available for free on YouTube. So it's a bit of an audience. You don't have to pay for it. You don't have to have a cable subscription. But once you do get onto that main card, and again, I'm going to look it up right here just to tell you how many fights are on this main card. You have Davion Franklin, Anthony Garrett, Linton Vassell, Hani Marks, Matos, Magomedov, and Alimaleh McFarland, Juliana Velasquez. So you have four fights on a main card. They've done three fight main cards here lately. And I get why they do it, because it's in, you know, the middle to the end of the week. People have to work in the morning. They don't really think about people on the East Coast that are an hour ahead of East Coast time, because these cards start way too late. But they have moved them where the prelims now, because they chalk it up and it could be a 10, 12 fight card. And they start at like 4:45 my time, which is like 3:45 Eastern, which is just stupid. So their pacing's really weird. But overall, to answer it, they could do that. I just don't know how successful they'd be. I mean, PFL can do it because, again, they send out a promotional email a week about how they have distribution rights over in Azerbaijan, and they talk about how their OPP platform is so great of an app. Honestly, I haven't downloaded it, and I haven't watched any of the PFL promotional stuff because I can't be bothered almost. You know, it's too much of a trek to try and find it. So PFL's going, they're zagging. Bellator is kind of zigging where they're on CBS. So maybe that opens up some doors for them to kind of look for some of that programming. The DAZN stuff they had sucked. I hated it. I still hate it. I have it up in Canada so I can watch it, but I hate it. So maybe Bellator does it. I just don't know yet.
It's going to be interesting, and we'll move on. But it's like, you know, I think the thing about nowadays is that the pandemic's made this worse, which is people reached a point where they realized there's a way to do this more smartly and more financially viable. It sucks for certain demographics.
Like putting stuff out for free on YouTube?
Well, I'll tell you this. The perfect example would be something like American Idol. When you realize that, okay, a network says, all right, we can film this show. We have all this stuff that's on the cutting room floor anyway. Why not just put this show on three nights a week for 2 hours and just start chewing up a lot of this broadcasting time instead of spending money on actors and spending money on production costs and having a regular show? That's why reality got so big. I think now the pandemic and even businesses are learning, what do we really need to do? Do we really need to have everybody at the office? Do we really need to, like, do we have to care about the East guy? Or can we just say this is...
We should.
Yeah, they should. But, or can they just say, well, this is just a time that we want to, you know, have our programming on. It eats up a lot of space, and that's just, that's tough shit to the guys that can't, you know, access it at the right times. All right, Craig.
All right, John. You're up.
So, fuck over unders.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've already outed me as a Burger King guy. I like Dr. Pepper. I actually, you know, John, we have pop and popcorn fights, right, with Fight Night Picks. It's a question mark kicks thing. So now I'm just drifting between what we have, like 5 or 6 shows now. It's insane. It's weird. It's really weird. I live a weird life. I got to say that. Just straight up, I live a strange life. But we have pop and popcorn fights. So I go out of my way. I go to the theater, support the local theater, buy the popcorn. I drink the pop. Dr. Pepper's my pop. And I'm looking forward to this weekend, John, when we talk over-unders, because there's so many pop and popcorn fights. And in our main event, we have Deiveson Figueiredo taking on my guy. And I mean, if you haven't watched the picks and predictions, do so. But I picked against my guy, future champ Brandon Moreno, 2020. But John, we look at this main event, and if we're picking over-unders, if I set it at 1.5 rounds in the main event, do you think it goes over or under?
I'm going to do a comparison for some old heads. Deiveson Figueiredo is in that Henin Burrell space where he won a belt, but you're not really quite sure what you're dealing with yet. Like, okay, he's good, but was he just good against this guy, or is he good against every guy? And the question, you know, with him missing weight and fighting Benavidez twice is, does he just have Joseph Benavidez's number, or is he a potential all-timer? Can he do to you know, Brandon Moreno what he did to Joseph Benavidez? I happen to think he cannot. So I'm going to take the over in the rounds of the main event. I think Brandon Moreno is going to stick around for at least 3. I do think Deiveson Figueiredo is a hell of a fighter. I just happen to think Brandon Moreno is 1-2. And I think that it's going to go a little bit further than 1.5.
Late second round, early third round finish for Figueiredo. I'll take the over. I'm very high on Figgy. I mean, he just went through UFC 255. This is 256. So let's look forward to it. Now, if we talk about it, there were 3 fights that fell out earlier on this week. Matt and I had already covered 2 of them. I was looking forward to the fight between Carl Roberson and Dalcha Lunjambula, Dalcha champ. But John, we still have a couple of days left before this event. If we set the amount of fights that fall out at 1.5, what are you taking, over or under here?
Oh man, I'm looking at this card and I'm thinking, who could it be? Do I see 2 fighters on here that could fall out? And the irony of that of saying that out loud is I have no idea what criteria I would use to determine who would fall out. All right, I'm going to do this. You're going to hate this, but I'm going to do it.
Uh-oh.
There's a lot of fighters here that are actually, this is a pretty name-heavy card, right? Ferguson's got a name. The Moicano's kind of got a name. Jacare's got a name. Dos Santos has a name. Cub Swanson has a name. Mackenzie Dern has a name. Tisha Torres has a name. All right, so here's my screwed-up logic to get to taking the over. A lot of entourages. A lot of people around these guys. They've been around for a while. They're interacting with a lot of people. Even if they're not interacting with fans, they're interacting with other fight teams. I'm going to take the over.
I mean, Jacare had COVID like day of and weighed in one time in Jacksonville. What else? Kevin Holland's just coming off of COVID. Can you catch it twice?
I think that people would like you to think you can't, but I think it's months
is
apart.
It like, is it like chicken pox or mono?
I don't know.
You get chicken pox twice. I don't know.
I dropped out of medical school right before COVID.
Yeah, I didn't get that far either. That's why I'm talking about fights. I'll take the under and I'll be optimistic. I hope everything comes to fruition. I know there's rumblings and rumors and fake news about the co-main event. Some people saying Oliveira can't make weight. Then I saw Ferguson COVID rumors. I think it's all a bunch of hooey, but I'll take the under. So let's look forward to our first fight on the prelims. And this is a fight that a lot of people weren't sure if it was actually going to happen. But Chase Hooper is fighting Peter Barrett in one of the lowest level fights at featherweight you're going to see in your entire life. How many times do you think the commentary focuses on Chase Hooper's age? I'm going to set it at 2.5. You're going to take the over or the under?
Oh, they're going to blow by that. He's going to go through that. He's going to go past, or they're going to go past 2.5 in a Ferrari. That's how fast they're going to get those 2.5 out of the way. So, yeah, I think they're going to be talking. They'll do that in the first time he's on screen. They'll mention his name, his age 3 times. So, yeah, I'm taking the over.
I'll take the over, too. He is 21. He can drink a beer. Good for him. So we're UFC 256. We're the last pay-per-view for the year. UFC 257 is in January, headlined by none other than Dustin Poirier and some guy from Ireland they're bringing in to fight him. How many promos do you think they're going to make for UFC 257? If I set the over-under at 1.5, how many do you think we're going to see during the broadcast?
I would never, ever question your validity as a bookmaker, but there's a lot of overs. And I would say that it's because the over-unders are set a little low. I think that they're going to hit too easy. I think that they really want to get this this fight to draw a lot of eyes. I think it will draw a lot of eyes. I think Dana would love if there was a worldwide vaccination distribution before then so that we can get some people and some assets in some seats. Dude, I can't even imagine. You know, the interesting thing is, I can't even imagine Conor McGregor fighting without a crowd. That's the interesting part here, is that Conor McGregor fighting. I mean, and everybody that's fought so far without a crowd, you say that before they fought. You're like, I can imagine, man, this Masvidal Usman fight. I can't imagine seeing it without a crowd. So yeah, but I don't know. McGregor and Poirier is a little different, and I don't know. I think you would think that Dana would just get those things. You see those things on TV where it's like you put it over your head and it's like the thing, and it's like. It's like
you can put the arms behind it and hug someone.
Yeah, I think Dana would sell hazmat suits for this fight if he could, to get people in the seats. So yeah, I think we're gonna go way over the promos, way over 1.5.
I don't know if those are cooler or thunder blankets for dogs, but they're both pretty cool. I my over under skills tonight. I think my topics were good. I don't think my numbers were great. I'm gonna take the over as well. I'm thinking 2 or 3. You gotta hype this thing up. And whether you and I can go or whether, you know, old folks home residents can go first, I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
All right, Craig, let's move on to For the Gram. I want to talk about Clarissa Shields because I opened the show with a Clarissa Shields quote that's gotten a lot of hate online. I want to read another one, which is what she posted on Instagram. And what I think I might do is I may transition For the Gram, one Twitter hitter, and posting to the book into something I see on those social media platforms and then having us comment on them. So we'll see.
I like it.
But we'll start this week with this one. Here's what she posted on Instagram. This is Clarissa Shields. This transition isn't one to be taken lightly. So much respect for Holly Holm already, but even more that she came and did some kicking drills with me and just added knowledge as I go through this process. Thank you, champ. So that is pretty much the opposite of the quote that I gave earlier. So here's my question. What is your gut feeling about how Clarissa Shields is going to do? And is Holly Holm really the right person to be training with?
I'll answer the second question first. Yes. And I saw a lot of people. I posted one of the Body Lock MMA's videos over on Reddit. And they basically talked about the fact that, you know, they think the move to Jackson Wink is the perfect move for Clarissa Shields. And I agree with them, Matthew Wells and Ant Walker. And a lot of people commented and said, no, you're wrong. ATT would have been the play. All right, well, put yourself in Clarissa Shields' shoes. Do I go to ATT and train with the Ioannis, the Amanda Nunes's, the so on and so forth, Amanda Hibas's? And, oh, by the way, happen to run into Kayla Harrison there? Or do I turn a 180, go to Jackson Wink, train with a former professional boxer, multi-time champion, and UFC champion Holly Holm, who's been there and done that in the sport and continues to do so into her late 30s. What's the play? I think the move is perfect for her to go to Jackson Wink. I think Holly Holm's the perfect person to train with to get you ready mentally, but also physically for a fight like that. How do I think she'll fare? I hope they give her, you know, layups on a 5-foot net with a rim that's 3 feet around. That's what I hope that the PFL gives her. Because if they throw her right into the deep end in whatever type of, you know, Grand Prix style, tournament style season that they have, I don't think she'll do very well at all. And, you know, I like Clarissa Shields. I hope she does well. She is good for the sport of mixed martial arts, but for combat sports in general. But if she goes in there fights like a Larissa Pacheco, it's over. And we know what's going to happen against Kayla Harrison. Judo beats boxing every day in MMA.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm with you on not going to ATT because of Kayla Harrison. And the reality is that she may end up in the UFC and have to fight all the fighters that are at ATT now. Holly Holm's kind of on her way out. I think going to Jackson Wink is more Clarissa Shields' brand. Like, I am a champion. I train with champions. There's a lot of champions at Jackson Wink. It's a championship gym. And I think that being able to train with someone who made the transition and also being able to see the GOAT every day, who's also, you know, trying to do something new. So he's reinvigorated. I'm sure John Jones is probably in the gym a lot more now than he was previously for that reason. So I think it's a good move, but, you know, it remains to be seen. I'm with you. I think – I don't want to say that they shouldn't throw her to the wolves. I don't think they should, but I think that they should give her some challenges. You know, and the person I think is missed in all this, and I'm just going to throw her name in this conversation, is Amanda Serrano, who is a boxer and an MMA fighter. She's done a pretty effective job of making the transition. Now, she fights for Combate Americas. I met her when I covered a Combate Americas fight in Tucson. So she's not going through it in a very high-profile way. But I think that she's done a good job of really immersing herself in jiu-jitsu and learning all these different aspects of the fight game. And 4 or 5 years from now, she could be something special.
What do you make of the Tucson Roadrunners?
Not much. Oh, okay. I don't make much of them. Okay. All right, Craig, let's move on to one Twitter hitter. Craig, Francis Ngannou's patience is wearing thin. He thinks he is next in line for the title shot at heavyweight. Stipe Miocic is doing what Stipe Miocic does, which is live his life and get to fighting kind of when he feels like it. I want to read you my favorite tweet. And this is just some guy. I just happened to stumble across this tweet. And I want to get your thoughts on this. So this is Poppy, who's at Good Brother Game. He wrote, y'all wanted Usman stripped for being injured and postponing the Burns fight, but y'all are okay with Stipe fighting every blue moon and using the excuse of being a volunteer fighter. Here's my favorite part. He's making Francis wait to get cats out of trees. Hashtag strip Stipe. So here's the deal. First of all, Poppy, we're in a pandemic, so I'll never get cats out of trees. But I love that tweet. And it'll definitely be on the screen when we do the video. So what do you think? I mean, do you think the UFC should be leaning on Stipe a little bit more here? I mean, they lean on – they're kind of pick and choose who has to vacate. Khabib's like, see you guys later. And they're like, nah, you're the champ still. Usman, you know, hurts himself. And they're like, hey, man, clock's ticking. It all kind of depends on who's got the belt, what they want to do with it, right?
I think somebody got a tee and a wiffle ball and just put Poppy right there and just let him swing. I think he hit that one right out of the park. I love that from Poppy. Good job, man. I wish they book a fight. I wish they book a rematch between Stipe and Ngannou. I mean, you know, I've been there for some loud crowd pops and whatnot. It was cool to see Cormier beat Uzdemir. It was like the tension in that arena when Stipe fought Ngannou was unlike anything I've ever seen before. So or felt. So I'd love to see a rematch. I'd love to see it soon. But yeah, just the way the world is right now, it's not really feasible for Stipe to take those fights. And he's got to be smart, too. I mean, this guy probably realistically only has, what, one or two fights left in his career? He's already the GOAT at heavyweight, unlike what PFL would want you to think. So, yeah, just wait. Just wait. And it's unfortunate, but just wait.
Here's where it gets interesting for Stipe Miocic is that, like, he's content with his career right now. But he's weighing that against, if I fight and beat Ngannou and fight and beat Jones, the legacy is set, and so's the money. And I think that those are the two things that are kind of hanging out there for him. He could walk away now and let Ngannou and Jones figure it out. But I think that those two things are just hanging out there for him. And the problem for him is that he wants the Jones fight, and he ain't going to get it unless he fights Ngannou, because the UFC wants Ngannou. And I think that's what sucks, because he would just as soon have a super fight with Jones, win or lose, walk away. If he loses, he probably gets a rematch. So let's say he gets $10 million for the first fight, probably gets $10 million for the second, $20 million, see you later. But he's got to fight Ngannou first. And that's no day at the beach, whether he beat him or not. All right, Craig, let's move on to posting to the book. Craig, if you happen to be on the Facebook group MMA Freaks like I was, here's what you found out from CurrentMMA.com. Anthony Pettis might have a new Showtime kick. So first I want to ask you, would we consider this clickbait or kickbait? Two, have you seen this? And if you haven't, there's a link in the rundown. But if you haven't, do you think it's going to be impressive?
So I had not until I read the show notes, and then I clicked on it. It's like if kicks became what you used to do in middle school when you go like cow tipping on other kids. That's what this is.
Right.
It's not a Showtime kick. It's like a Showtime. It's like when you're a little kid and your dad goes, "Ooh, I got your nose," which you could do across the screen, couldn't you, Dad?
Should I?
People
in the comments love the dad stuff, just so you know.
There you go. So there it is. But it's kind of like that if that was a kick. You got it? Can I have it back now?
Here you go. Hold on.
Okay. Thanks. Boom, nose back on, still crooked as ever. But yeah, it's weak. It is weak.
There was a game, a video game, I can't remember the name of it. It's frustrating me. Where Doom. You used to have to decide, it was like you were doing karate, and you would choose, do you want to strike, or do you want to strike the body, or do you want to kick? And I can't for the life of me remember this video game. It's an old game. But that's what it reminded me of. It reminded me of, like, I've seen this before. It looks like it was part of, like, Cobra Kai.
It feels
Kai.
Like a Mortal Kombat type of move or something.
Yes, it should never be compared to the Showtime kick. Fun fact about John Franklin, in the building for the Showtime kick. Happened here in Arizona. All right, let's move on. Craig, I'm gonna hand this over to you, but I'm going to get you started on it a little bit because you're the Reddit guy. Actually, I'll just ask the question and we'll roll from there. How do you think – we've talked about Clarissa Shields. We've talked about at length this whole boxing transition. How do you feel like MMA fans should process when a boxer wants to transition over to MMA? Because it's weird, you know. I tell people all the time that, you know, boxing, for me, boxing has always been, and I'll use this analogy, the women analogy, which is a strained analogy, but I'll use it anyway. Boxing is like a hot girl that knows they're hot. And MMA's always been trying to convince you they're hot. You know, they give you things. They give you all these fights. And they just overwhelm you. Boxing's like, yeah, we'll see you in 3 months. We're not going to do anything for 3 months. See you later. You're not going to see a big fight until August. It'll be a really big fight, though. And you'll love it. And before the fight, we're not going to give you fights of any consequence whatsoever. And they've just always been secure in who they are. And I think that that gives MMA and MMA fans an inferiority complex. So that when boxers want to come over, that they then, you know, and I've given my complete side of this and just the explanation of the question. You're a grown-up. You can answer it. How do you think MMA fans should handle it?
Well, I wasn't an MMA fan when it happened. Or I was, but I was way too young. When James Toney crossed over and fought Randy Couture, what was the promotion like for that fight back then?
It was crazy because James Toney was just – he had done a bunch of interviews with Errol Hawani, and he was just kind of calling out – like, he was just talking about how – he said everything Floyd said, but he looked like he was willing to put his ass on the line. We kind of never knew we'd see – we never thought we'd ever see Floyd in the octagon. But Toney kept kind of dabbling. And you didn't know because he was such a good boxer when he was young, and he was so slick that you were like, is there a chance he can maybe keep somebody off his legs? There wasn't, and Randy Couture shouldn't have been the guy. But he was, and it was interesting because of the credentials of both. Like, they were both, I don't want to say equivalent, but Toney was a big deal in boxing. You know, if Randy Couture's a top 20 all-time fighter, James Toney's probably a top 40 all-time boxer. So they're not that far apart in terms of their respective sports. So, yeah, there was a lot of promotion for it, man. People were excited.
I mean, it seems to me, you know, I look at MMA through a different lens because I grew up an MMA fan. I didn't grow up watching boxing. I mean, yeah, occasionally you'd see it on TV, but it wasn't anything that I got overly excited about. And again, like, I came to it the way most people do, the way you do. I know MMA Twitter doesn't like this, but this segment's for MMA Reddit, and they don't like it either. I came up a hockey fan and a baseball fan, and I'd watch a little bit of basketball on the side. My viewing habits have switched a lot. You know, I watch MMA primarily. I still try and catch as many baseball games as I can. And I watch hockey enough to hold a conversation, but it's tough for me to try and tune into everything all at once. I will say I do watch more boxing than I ever did, just for the purpose of talking about it. But when it comes to MMA, I feel like you should be accepting of these things. But also, we've had instances on a big stage where, and I mentioned them, you know, in conversation in this episode, you had Jack Swagger coming into MMA. And Bellator tried to make a big deal of it. And now it's almost like, well, we're stuck with him. He's not very good at MMA. And he's in his late 30s. But he's a big draw for wrestling fans. So we got to kind of use him as much as we can. And in the UFC, they went the route of, and I love the walkout. Honestly, I go back and watch it all the time. UFC 203, main card, Mickey Gall fighting CM Punk. Yes, Chick Magnet Punk. And I remember watching the promo and the buildup for that and thinking, this guy has no business being in an MMA octagon. And if you go back and watch that walkout, it's sickening how upset Duke Rufus and the rest of the corner looks as they're making the walkout. And Chick Magnet's feeling himself. And then they're all like, you know, they're not into it. And Chick Magnet turns around and then the guys are like, oh yeah, man, yeah, let's go. And then their faces just go back to like a stone again. All that to say, it's kind of been diluted a little bit with, you know, the wrestlers and the big name fighters that don't really have business being in MMA, getting an opportunity that when a boxer wants to do it, like a legit pro boxer, it's almost like, all right, cool. Well, we'll see what happens, I guess. Because you had the James Tonys, you've had the pro wrestlers, you've had other athletes. And again, with other athletes, there's a little bit of a caveat there because football players that want to do it typically do well. I mean, the Eric Anders, the Brendan Schaubs of the world, right? Like they've at least been there and done that. So for pro boxers, when they want to transition over to MMA, I think MMA fans should welcome them with open arms. I think they should kind of come into it as, all right, well, this is the way that an MMA striker strikes. This is the way that a tactical MMA fighter who has a little bit of a boxing background will strike. Like, again, we brought them up, but Diaz brothers, so on and so forth. But when a technical boxer comes into MMA, you should try and soak up as much knowledge as you can as a fan, because, hey, a couple of the things that they use that maybe they find success with, maybe that could translate to another fighter and so on and so forth. So I would get excited about it, but it's tough to try and convince an MMA fan to get excited about different athletes coming in.
Well, because here's why. Because I think that MMA fans, and maybe MMA fighters to an extent, think that their fighters or their sport is so much tougher than boxing that, okay, ours is closer to a fight. So if these people really got into a fight, our guy would win. And I'll say this to you. I'm not saying I disagree with that, but I will say this. Boxers are more intelligent than MMA fighters are in the way that they promote things and the way they handle them. I'll give you an example. When James Toney came over to fight, or when CM Punk comes over to fight, or when you know, anybody that's kind of out of their element comes over to fight, what do all MMA fighters think? I got to get this guy out as quick as I can so that I don't look inferior to this guy that's crossing over. Okay? Now, that's one approach. So what did Randy Couture do? James Toney comes in. James Toney gets blown away, and James Toney is just kind of dismissed. Okay? We haven't seen a boxer in the octagon since. What did Floyd Mayweather do when Conor McGregor came into his world? Depends on who you ask. You can either be on the side that Conor McGregor just did that well and lasted 10 rounds because Conor McGregor is great, or you could look at it like maybe Floyd carried him and maybe Floyd set up a rematch. Maybe Floyd made it so that other MMA fighters think they want to now box. Maybe YouTube fighters or YouTube kids think they want to box. So who's really smarter in the end? The guy that made someone look good enough to make them want to keep doing it, to cash checks off them, or the guy that felt inferior and wanted to just wipe the floor with somebody? I think that it's, you know, and listen, real quick, yeah. I was talking to Shaquille about this, and I'll preview the show real quick. Revisionist MMA is coming out soon. And we were just talking about, you know, what is more really technical? A stand-up fighter or a ground fighter? And I said, people tend to think it's a ground fighter because of the nuances. And they think that, oh, you really got to know what you're looking at to understand the ground game. Maybe. But the thing that I said in the podcast was, we think that we understand the stand-up game better because we can look at a guy's face who's getting pieced up and understand he's getting his ass whipped. Here's the thing, and I'm going to throw this to you, and this is pretty deep, so get ready. Is the guy that's really good at chess actually better than the guy that's really good at checkers when everyone plays checkers? A very few people play chess. So to be better than everyone in the world at chess, you're better than, I don't know, 50,000 guys. If you're the best person in the world that plays checkers, and anybody could play checkers, that's pretty much more impressive. So the fact that all fights start on the feet and spend most of their time on the feet doesn't mean that that is less of an art.
I'm assuming I'm in agreement with you. I'd rather be the best than this is a question from last week, you joker. Would you rather be the big fish in the small pond or the small fish in the big pond? Or vice versa, you know what I mean? You know what I was trying to get at. I'm having a hard time. It's 12:31 local. To really answer the question, I would like to be at the top of that big pond. You know, I would like to be champion checker player Craig. And all I have to do is start putting pieces behind me in this background. And maybe one day it'll happen for me. It probably won't. So it's a tough one. I don't know if I have a great answer for you. So maybe check the Revisionist MMA show out. All I will say in summation is that guy that's short and small and doesn't know how to read knows how to make a lot of money. So whatever he does is probably the smart way to go.
Yeah, I guess in answer to the question, I think that boxing fans or MMA fans should embrace boxing even more. Let the guys come over. Let them, you know, I think that adjusting the rules is maybe pushing it. Like where, you know, but, you know, there's always going to be gentlemen's agreements in the back. I'm sure Donald Cerrone would happily fight a guy near the end of his rope in boxing if they both agree to stand up. So, you know, I think that they should kind of chill out and stop being, you know, having such an inferiority complex and let more of these guys come over and let's see what they got. Let's see if you give a guy some time in the gym, what they can really bring. Because I'm telling you, back to my other example, Amanda Serrano's doing some things, man. She's really turned herself into a well-rounded combat sports fighter. So she definitely needs a chance. All right, Craig. I want to wrap the show up, but I want to give you a chance to take a little bit of a victory lap. Talk about everything that's going on. I mean, we've alluded to a lot of it. Just tell people what's cracking on this network right now.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, you know, inside baseball, as now I say it 5-6 times an episode. I keep switching setups around. I keep trying new lighting. My computer conked out. I had to buy a new mic. At least I thought I did. Really, I didn't. But all that to say, every opportunity I've been afforded lately and over the past year has been all due in part to not just the hard work of yourself, of Matt. I don't want to pump everybody's tires, but it's really the fans out there that have helped us and really helped grow the network. So you have Revisionist MMA with Shaquille and John. You have the Recap Show with John and Matt. You have the Picks with myself and Matt. You have This Week in MMA. You have Early Stoppage that you're watching right now. And it's kind of a snowball effect right now. It's an exciting ride to be on. We're always looking to make different moves. I know the podcast, oddly enough, we focus so much on YouTube that now we're starting to go back to, all right, iTunes, Spotify. And it seems like people really enjoy it. So if you do enjoy it, let us know down below in the comments. We're always looking to make different changes and looking to change things up. I know a lot of people like to rag on the fact that I'm shaving my balls all the time and telling people about it, but that's an exciting move in and of itself. Not just that I can tell people about it, because you probably assume that I did anyway, but the fact that we have like sponsors coming on and all of that adds on to the snowball effect of we're able to bring you more content, different content. So it's an exciting time to be a part of Fight Night Picks. I never would have thought 2020 would have gone this way, especially with the way the world's gone. And I mean, it's unfortunate for a lot of opportunities a lot of people have had to miss out on. Namely, I mean, we just had Tebe on this year and I was excited because he was going to have a cross Canada tour. And he gets started with his media in February up here. And the tour was supposed to start in the spring and then it didn't happen. So for a lot of people, it's just been an unfortunate year for us. I guess for our own benefit, it's been pretty good. But yeah, it's been a crazy year. And I've really appreciated the support from the fans this year. It's been crazy. Even the bad ones. You know, I started trying to get yoked again. And I'm out there every night pumping the tunes. And just thinking about all those mean comments. Keep those coming too, because they stick.
Yeah, keep coming. Those things, they I love them. I get a kick out of them. All right, guys. Too. Another episode of Early Stoppage is in the books. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FNP. I can be followed at Some Corner Man. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Let's get into it.